Today is Wednesday, June 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. As protests in the U.S. continue, President Trump took to Twitter promoting an unproven conspiracy theory.
Trump's tweet is the latest of a series of remarks that have stoked anger and racial division.
Plus, at least 53 were arrested in Hong Kong, marking 1 year of pro-democracy protests.
Hundreds of activists gathered in the heart of the city, shining lights and chanting Free Hong Kong.
And COVID-19 has ushered in the worst recession in nearly a century. We'll have those stories and more next. As protests over the death of a black man while in police custody continued into a third week, U.S. President Donald Trump again took to Twitter and posts that raised concerns he was fueling divisions. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara looks at how Trump's combative approach might fare at a time when there is a national outpouring of empathy for the African-American community.
Video of a 75-year-old man shoved by police in Buffalo, New York, went viral last week. The two officers involved have been charged with second-degree assault. But President Donald Trump reignited the controversy Tuesday, tweeting a video by a right-wing outlet presenting an unproven conspiracy theory that the man was trying to block police communication equipment. Trump accused him of being an Antifa provocateur, saying he fell harder than was pushed. Trump's tweet is the latest of a series of remarks that have stoked anger and racial division in a nation shaken with more than 2 weeks of unrest over the death of George Floyd, a black man who died after being in the custody of a white police officer. Norman Ornstein is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute.
This is not a president who is capable of looking at turmoil in the country and trying to find ways to heal wounds and bring people more broadly together. His success, as he has seen it, is built on attacking even more harshly anybody who's critical of him and at trying to stoke divisions and excite his own narrower base.
A base that may be getting even more narrow. Recent polls show 76% of Americans, including 71% of whites, call racism and discrimination a big problem in the U.S. compared to 50% in 2015. Jonathan Metzl is a sociology professor at Vanderbilt University, author of Dying of Whiteness, How the Politics of Racial Resentment is Killing America's Heartland.
A lot of white Americans are waking up to the reality that they were part of a system that maybe privileged them, but that has some pretty horrible implications for social justice and for everyone else.
A survey also shows that 78% of Americans support the protests and 57% believe police officers are more likely to treat black people unfairly. This shift in attitudes has contributed to change on the ground. Some mayors have agreed to redirect police funds towards social services, an idea perceived as radical just a few years ago. But meeting with law enforcement officials Monday, Trump rejected calls to defund the police and the notion of institutionalized racism in law enforcement.
Sometimes you'll see some horrible things like we witnessed recently, but 99% of them are great, great people.
The White House press secretary says Trump is combating racism by ensuring economic opportunity for black Americans and pushing for criminal justice reform. The president has spoken to George Floyd's family on the phone, but has not met with black community representatives or protesters. His election rival Joe Biden has met with Floyd's family and black leaders. While polls show Americans view Biden as more empathetic than Trump, the Democratic presidential nominee has his own challenges. Again, Norm Ornstein of AEI.
He's going to have to walk a fine line, getting support, as he has in the past, from law enforcement officials, while also making the strong call for dramatic transformation in how we deal with police and police violence in the country.
Biden has denounced rioting and also rejected calls to defund the police. He is focusing on police reforms and has pledged action to reverse systemic racism. Patsy Whitaker-Suara, VOA News, Washington.
Family members, politicians, and celebrities mourned George Floyd at his funeral in Houston, Texas, Tuesday. An African-American, Floyd died in police custody in Minneapolis, Minnesota on May 25th. The death has prompted protests around the United States and in many other countries. VOA's Mike Sullivan has this look at the memorial.
A private ceremony with hundreds of people inside the Houston church and many more along the route to the cemetery. The funeral service was broadcast on all major U.S. networks. The presumptive Democratic presidential nominee joined via video.
We cannot leave this moment thinking we can once again turn away from racism that stings at our very soul.
Houston police officers saluted as the casket entered the church. Four officers in Minneapolis faced charges in Floyd's death, one of them charged with murder.
Until the law is upheld and people know they will go to jail, they're going to keep doing it because they're protected by wickedness in high places.
A Houston police official called this a watershed moment.
And I really believe that there's a great hope here in this city, and that hope is spreading nationwide.
This was the third memorial in states where George Floyd had lived, Minnesota, North Carolina, and Texas. Monday, thousands came for a public viewing of the body in Houston. Tuesday, his family grieved.
I want justice for my brother, my big brother. Everybody gonna remember him.
And grapple with questions raised by his death. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
The protests in the United States have, of course, spread across the world, and many in Europe are questioning their country's colonial histories. In recent days, statues of 17th century slave trader Edward Colston in Bristol, England, and Belgian King Leopold II in Antwerp have been taken down. Paris-based journalist Nicolas Pinault tells VOA via WhatsApp about the conversations taking place.
Basically, what's going on right now, the debate is about what has been done among European countries to talk about this notorious heritage about slavery. And you have some main cities, let's say in France, it will be Nantes, it will be Bordeaux on the Atlantic shore, who took advantage and who made fortunes during slavery because of that trade between Africa and what's right now the American continent. And in some cities like Bordeaux, they really acknowledge what happened, and you know, they have some monuments, and they deeply acknowledge that part of their city's history is linked to the slavery, and they have to acknowledge the crime that happened back in the day. But other people, they feel that European Union and European Union countries have always said, you know, slavery, it's mainly America, because basically slaves happened to settle then after in the U.S. So it's mainly an American history. But the fact is that because of all these companies that ship slaves on the other side of the ocean, many people think that we didn't dig too far enough, too deep enough in the European history, and something needs to be done about that. You have also in France, for example, some calls to remove some statue of Napoleon, for example, because we know he's very famous to enact what was then in French history, the Black Code, basically make it legit to have slaves. And you have many calls like that, not only for non-white people, to say we need to look at her history and our history, and we need to make sure that the crimes of the past, they have to be acknowledged. That's one. And second of all, those figures, those political figures who used to be very famous in our history, maybe we should not honor them. And one people, it was interesting, in Belgium made this comparison with what happened during the Nazi period. And the person was saying, you know, in Germany, would you have, even, you know, if he was an important figure in Germany, would you have a statue of Hitler? Obviously not, because all the crimes that he committed. So when people are linked to crimes, should we keep honor them? That's still ongoing, the debate ongoing in Europe.
Nicolas Pinault is a reporter living and working in Paris, France. And coming up later...
Hong Kong police arrested 53 people during Tuesday rallies to mark 1 year since the city's pro-democracy protests began.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute. The Breakthrough Listen Initiative has been scanning the sky since 2016 to spot communication that might be transmitted by possible intelligent extraterrestrial beings. The Breakthrough Listen Initiative recently released a collection of data that was gathered by the project's most wide-ranging survey of radio emissions. A Pennsylvania State University-led team is working to find out if extraterrestrials could be employing the transiting method, which our scientists have successfully used to spot exoplanets in order to find Earth. The researchers are studying the Breakthrough Listen data to examine radio signals from 20 nearby stars that align with the plane of Earth's orbit, conditions that would allow extraterrestrials from around those stars to detect Earth. So far, the Penn State team and others have found no signs of extraterrestrial civilizations. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The coronavirus pandemic has triggered the worst global recession in nearly a century, according to a new economic report. And the pain isn't over yet, even if there is no second wave of infections. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says hundreds of millions of people have lost their jobs, and the crisis is worsening inequalities by hitting the poor and the young the hardest. If there is no second wave of infections, the agency forecasts a global drop in economic output of 6% this year. And if the coronavirus does reemerge later this year, that decline could reach 7.6%. Brazil on Tuesday brought detailed COVID-19 data back onto its national website after a Brazilian Supreme Court justice ruled that the full set of information, which had been removed over the weekend, be reinstated. Now, according to a Johns Hopkins University tracker, there have been more than 7.25 million cases of COVID-19 worldwide, with nearly 2 million cases alone in the United States. Now we have additional information about the global pandemic on our website, that address, voanews.com. In Asia, Hong Kong police made several arrests on Tuesday during protests that saw hundreds of activists take to the streets. Reuters' Libby Hogan has more.
Hong Kong police arrested 53 people during Tuesday rallies to mark 1 year since the city's pro-democracy protests began. Hundreds of activists gathered in the heart of the city, shining lights and chanting "Free Hong Kong," before police fired pepper pellets and pepper spray to break up crowds. Police say people were arrested for offences, including unlawful assembly and participating in unauthorised assembly. Protesters, young and old, marched together in defiance of social distancing limits that ban gatherings of more than 8 people. 78-year-old George Lam was one of them.
We are committed to protecting our homeland and our future generations. We should cherish every step while we still have the chance to go on to the street. We should not step back until the end.
Beijing recently passed a motion to introduce a new national security bill for the city last month that prohibits sedition, subversion of state power, foreign interference and terrorism. Demonstrators fear it will dramatically stifle freedom in Hong Kong. Security Secretary John Lee told the South China Morning Post on Wednesday that local police were setting up a dedicated unit to enforce the law. He also said they would have intelligence gathering, investigation and training capabilities. Last year, Hong Kong's pro-democracy protests were sparked by a government bill that would have allowed people to be extradited to mainland China for trial, where the courts are controlled by the Communist Party. That bill was withdrawn after months of protests that at times veered into violence. Details of the security law or how it will work have not yet been revealed, but it's been given the nod from banking giants HSBC and Standard Chartered. That sparked criticism from investors, and US Secretary of State Mike Pompeo singled out HSBC on Tuesday, saying such, quote, corporate kowtows got little in return from what he called the Chinese Communist Party's cohesive bullying tactics. More protests in Hong Kong are planned in coming days.
Libby Hogan reports for Reuters News. Sweden has dropped its investigation into the 1986 murder of former Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, who was shot dead in downtown Stockholm. The case's chief prosecutor said Wednesday the investigation was being closed because the main suspect, Stig Engström, had died in 2000. Palme was gunned down on February 28, 1986, after he and his wife, Lisbeth Palme, left a movie theater in Stockholm. The murder shocked the nation and shook the Scandinavian country's image as being so safe and peaceful that politicians could wander around the public without protection. Germany's foreign minister has warned Israel that its plan to begin annexing parts of the West Bank would violate international law, but he declined to say how Germany or Europe would respond. Heiko Maas's visit to Jerusalem is his first trip outside of Europe since the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. It comes just weeks before Israel intends to extend its sovereignty over the Jewish West Bank settlements, in line with President Donald Trump's controversial Mideast plan. The plan has come under harsh criticism from some of Israel's closest allies, including Germany. They say that unilaterally redrawing the Mideast map would destroy any lingering hopes for establishing a Palestinian state. South Korea's government said on Wednesday that it will press charges against two activist groups that have used balloons to float anti-Pyongyang leaflets and bottles filled with rice to North Korea. Any action against the groups is likely to trigger a debate over freedom of expression in South Korea and whether President Moon Jae-in's liberal government is sacrificing democratic principles to keep alive his ambitions for inter-Korean engagement. The World Food Program is concerned about growing food shortages in North Korea because of COVID-19. A UN human rights investigator also expresses alarm that the pandemic has worsened widespread hunger and malnutrition in the country. Though North Korea has not officially confirmed any cases of the disease, foreign analysts say the virus is spreading. Lisa Schlein reports.
The humanitarian situation and nutritional status of millions of people in North Korea was bleak before the outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. The World Food Program says more than 10 million people, or nearly 40% of the population, are in need of humanitarian aid. WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers says even more people have no access to health, clean water, sanitation, and hygiene services.
There are also 1.7 million children under five who are also living under the threat of recurrent natural disasters and now the global COVID-19 pandemic. Malnutrition has been persistent and widespread, causing long-term damage to the health and development of children, as well as pregnant and nursing mothers.
Beer says nearly 1 in 10 children under 5 is underweight and 1 in 5 is stunted. She notes malnutrition on that scale will cause irreversible damage to hundreds of thousands of children. The World Food Program warns preventive measures such as quarantine also may make it difficult for vulnerable people to get the health care and nutritious food they need to stay healthy. The North Korean government of Kim Jong-un has not officially confirmed any cases of coronavirus. However, in late January, North Korea closed its border with China, essentially ending trade between the two countries. UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in North Korea, Thomas Ojea Quintana, says the action has exacerbated the food crisis and deepened economic hardships facing North Koreans. He says an increasing number of families eat only twice a day, and some are starving. Even soldiers, he says, reportedly are suffering from food shortages. But he expresses particular concern about thousands of people in secretive political prison camps. He says many reportedly are dying because of hard work and lack of food, contagious diseases, and overcrowding. The UN investigator is calling for the immediate release of prisoners with vulnerable conditions who are at particular risk of infection and death from COVID-19. Quintana also is urging the UN Security Council to consider lifting sanctions imposed over Pyongyang's nuclear and missile programs. He says the sanctions are having a crushing impact on the livelihoods of people and the ability of the government to respond to their needs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Compared with other racial and ethnic groups, African Americans face an uphill struggle succeeding in academia, especially in the hard sciences, where they fill few professorships and important research posts. That's why the group Particles for Justice has called for a strike on Wednesday, where no scientific research or publishing will be done. And black scientists and academics are encouraged to rest and refuel during this fraught time. The group's petition has already received over 4,000 signatures. And to find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips interviewed strike organizer Chanya Prescott Weinstein, the first African-American woman in history to hold a faculty position in theoretical cosmology, via Zoom.
Research shows that students from minority backgrounds, like Black students, come into college and university with the same levels of interest in science, technology, engineering, mathematics as white students and Asian students. But they are experiencing forms of discouragement once they try to actually proceed in those majors.
Can you give me a couple of examples from your own life?
I went to Harvard for undergrad, and I was very enthusiastic when I got there. I thought I was going to be like in a community of nerds. And one of the first things I heard from one of my future physics classmates was that all of the Black students who had been admitted were affirmative action cases, that none of us had earned our spot in the class. You know, I had a lot of white classmates whose parents had paid for them to take SAT courses and had sent them to like good prep schools and stuff like that. I went to a public school in Los Angeles. I taught myself to take the SAT. And so I had worked a lot harder in some ways than many of my white classmates, but they were never under suspicion of whether they were there for the right reasons or had been admitted for the right reasons. I think that's one example. Another one is people would ask me what my major was, and I would say, I'm a double major in physics and astronomy. And they would say, yeah, but you don't look like that's what you're doing. Is that really what you're going to do? And I have friends and students I've known who've had worse things happen, like you're working in a lab and someone in the building doesn't recognize you and threatens to call the cops if you don't show them your ID. When you're Black, people are constantly kind of just discounting, do you belong in the room? And maybe you're in danger. That's exactly what happened with Ahmaud Arbery. He was just running down the street, and these guys were just like, he shouldn't be running down the street in our neighborhood.
You think that a high-level Black physicist working at a major university would be immune to some of this racism?
No, when Black physicists leave the lab or their office, we're still Black, and being a physicist doesn't protect us from that.
Tell me about this twofold strike that Particles for Justice has called for June 10th.
So we want people to engage in stopping doing science in order to apply pressure on the community. And also, we wanted it to be a day of rest if you are a Black scientist, that for one day, you don't have to try and keep up with other people being stressed out by what's happening at these protests, by the things that politicians are saying about people like you or anything like that. You can just have a day where you're like, I'm just going to watch TV to cope. And you're not going to be sitting there going, oh, but all of my other colleagues are getting work done while I am incapacitated. So it's really meant to be a very, very small rebalancing of the emotional toll and load that is associated with these struggles that we are dealing with.
Of course, these mass demonstrations are occurring in the context of a global pandemic.
Certainly worried about a second wave of COVID-19. I don't think that we have this under control here in the United States. So it has been very troubling for me to see that people feel compelled to go out into the streets and to protest. And I support them in doing so. And also it is heartbreaking for me because I do think that people will die because they were fighting to save Black lives. As you know, the Black American death rate from COVID-19 has been higher per capita than other groups in the United States. So one of the things that I'm thinking about is how do we get movement so that people can go home and feel safe and not worry that someone's going to knock on their door or not knock on their door and then shoot them, which is what happened to Breonna Taylor.
Do you have any thoughts for our African listeners who are hearing this broadcast?
I have to say that often it can seem like our issues are very distant. But I hope that when they look at us, that they see their cousins struggling for justice.
Professor Chanya Prescott Weinstein with the University of New Hampshire is the first African-American woman to hold a faculty position in theoretical cosmology. She was speaking to VOA's Adam Phillips. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by visiting voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.